Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. Wow, a new book. This is amazing. Ryan Grimm wrote essentially a book review slash article over at The Intercept. It just went up. The Taliban tried to surrender and the U.S. rebuffed them. Now here we are is the title of it. And the book is No Good Men Among the Living. It's by Anand Gopal. And the amazing thing is, you know, right after we took down the government of Afghanistan, you know, just a few weeks into the war, the Taliban tried repeatedly to surrender to the George W. Bush administration. And, just share it with you from Ryan Grimm's piece here. So when the Taliban came to surrender, the U.S. turned them down repeatedly in a series of arrogant blunders spelled out in Anand Gopal's investigative treatment of the Afghanistan war, No Good Men Among the Living. Only full annihilation was good enough for the Bush administration. They wanted more terrorists in body bags. The problem was that the Taliban had stopped fighting, either having fled to Pakistan or melted back into civilian life. Al-Qaeda, for its part, was down to a handful of members. So how do you kill terrorists if there aren't any? Simple. Afghans that the U.S. worked with understood the predicament that their military sponsors were in, so they fabricated bad guys. Demand has a way of creating supply, and the U.S. was paying for information that led to the death or capture of Taliban fighters. Suddenly, there were Taliban everywhere. Score settling ran amok. All you had to do to get your neighbor killed or sent to Guantanamo was tell the U.S. that they were members of the Taliban. Doors would be kicked in, no questions asked. Men left standing became warlords, built massive fortunes, and shipped their wealth abroad. It's amazing. After the few years of this charade, after their surrender efforts were repeatedly rebuffed, the old Taliban started picking up guns again. And, now the U.S. has managed to make the Taliban popular. This is, you know, a remarkable, remarkable piece. By the way, it's Anything Goes Friday. Anything you want to talk about today, our number is 202-808-9925. There's, a bunch of interesting things in the news. This is one of the more interesting in that it's just a demonstration of creativity. I'm not a big endorser of dog poop. But there's a group of white nationalists who want to have a gig in Crissy Field. This is a public park near the Golden Gate Bridge, and there's going to be a rally there tomorrow. And so this person, Tuffington was his name, said, you know, I think I'm going to come up with something fun that would, He was walking his dog in Golden Gate Park, and he says, my dogs are doing their business, and I was struck with the image of a bunch of alt-right folks stomping around a field of poop. So he creates this fake Facebook event with a group of 15 friends, encouraging them to, quote, leave a gift for our alt-right friends in Crissy Field. you know, this afternoon and this evening. So that Saturday morning when these guys show up, he said, take your dog to Chrissy Field and tell, let them do your business, do their business, and be sure not to clean it up. We'll see how this works out. You know, I don't know if this is a really great idea or a really dumb idea, but it's pretty amazing. Yesterday, on a couple of occasions, I was referring to people, you know, were calling in, they were talking about Fox so-called news, and I referred to two websites that you can go to get great information about how Fox is lying to its to the rubes, you know, to the people that that it was specifically set up to indoctrinate. And one is MediaMatters.org. I got that one right. The other is NewsHounds.us. And I called it by a different name yesterday. I was wrong. It's NewsHounds.us. So check that out. It's a really oh, Sue says that's a crappy idea. the park. Yeah, I guess so. Oh, very good one, Sue. That's a very good one. There's another story here that I thought was, yeah, I've got a bunch of stuff to share with you, just that I've been accumulating throughout the week. That, in fact, we mentioned on Facebook yesterday that I was going to talk about this on the radio today, and I never did get to it. And it's a concatenation of two different stories, or a merging of two different stories. One was in the Guardian, and the other was in the Financial Times. Starting with the one in the Financial Times, it's by Amy Williams, and it's called "Why a Dumb Phone is a Smart Move." And Amy is talking about, you know, thinking that she should swap her smartphone for a dumb one, because every time she sits down, she's looking at her phone. Every time she gets just a little bit bored, she looks at her phone. There's, you know, we've got to check out Facebook, got to check out Twitter. And points out that this behavior that we're all participating in now, where, you know, you sit down for 2 minutes, you know, you're waiting for a bus, you're waiting for a metro, you know, for a metro card, you're waiting for the waiter to show up in the restaurant. I mean, you know, literally the moments when normally we would just kind of power down and look around and be present, be mindful, and just say, oh, this is what a nice restaurant. I'm waiting for the waiter. Now it's like, oh, the waiter hasn't come over yet. I guess I better check my iPhone. And so anyhow, Amy Williams says this is not accidental. She's talking about how these tech engineers, quote, speak in the language of addiction and behavioral psychology, although they prefer the term persuasive technology. There's even this company, Dopamine Labs. Now, dopamine is the chemical, the neurotransmitter that it jacks up really high in your brain, a little bit high when you take caffeine, a lot higher when you take cocaine or amphetamines. It's the ultimate reward chemical, or one of them. I mean, you know, one of the major ones, probably the major one. And it's also the chemical that is released when, like, if you're gambling, if you win a game, boom, dopamine rush. Dopamine rush associated with the climax, with orgasm. The dopamine rush associated with a whole lot of things. And it's the believed to be the key to addiction, understanding addiction. So Dopamine Labs, named for the chemical release of the reward center of the brain, offers a service to tech businesses wanting to, quote, keep users engaged. Founded by two neuroscientists turned programmers, it talks explicitly about using artificial intelligence to modify apps and thus release dopamine hits to, quote, surprise and hook each user. So Amy writes, robots are trying to alter your brain chemistry to make you spend more time doing something you don't want to do, which is hanging out with your smartphone. And she's right. So then the second article is from The Guardian. This is by Ben Tarnoff. This is from, they're both from the 23rd of August, which was, what, day before yesterday? Yeah. This one is titled, Silicon Valley Siphons Our Data Like Oil, But the Deepest Drilling Has Just Begun. And Ben Tarnoff opens the article by saying, what if a cold drink costs more on a hot day? You know, Uber surge pricing may be coming soon to the restaurant or store near you. All kinds of prices will start becoming dynamic rather than static. Why, you know, buying lunch at lunchtime will cost more than buying lunch at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. He points out that Facebook and Google together receives 76% of all dollars spent in the United States on online advertising. Goes to these two places, Facebook and Google. And Silicon Valley has to make a profit, you know, beyond Facebook and Google. So how do they do it? Get people to spend more time online. Make the apps as addictive as possible. So how do you do that? Well, Ben Tarnoff writes, Amazon is going to show the industry how to monitor more movements by making corporate surveillance as deeply embedded in our physical environment as it is in our virtual one. Silicon Valley already earns vast sums of money from watching what we do online. Soon, it'll earn even more money from watching what we do offline. And he talks about how Amazon built a smart grocery store in Seattle. Now, right now, if you're online, if you're on Facebook, they literally are monitoring everything you do. If you're on Google, they're literally monitoring everything you do. How long do you read that story? How long are you on this site? How long, you know, what do you mouse over? All that kind of stuff. But imagine if this goes into the real world. If your supermarket not only knew which items you bought, but how long you lingered in front of which products, what your path was through the store. Did you look at things at eye level, knee level, foot level? Where does your eye go? What are you doing? This data, Ben writes, holds valuable lessons about your personality and your preferences, lessons that Amazon will use to sell you more stuff online and off. And then he talks about how, and they're taking it a step beyond that with the Echo and Siri and all of these, quote, smart apps or smart devices that are listening to you constantly, to everything that's going on. And then he adds, in late July, Amazon obtained a patent for drones to spy on people's homes as they make deliveries. An example included in Amazon's patent filing is roof repairs. So the drone that's dropping off your package is also going to check out your roof and see if it needs to be fixed. If it does, then they'll sell that information to roofing contractors in your area. And then he says, what do we do about this? You know, we're being spied on to death, essentially, not just by governments now, but by corporations. The only solution, he writes, is political. As customers, we're nearly powerless, but as citizens, we can demand more democratic control of our data. Data is a common good. We make it together. We make it meaningful together, since useful patterns only emerge from collecting and analyzing large quantities of it. But that we should have some say. We should have some control over all this. And I agree. I think that that's a really important thing. And this is something we should be paying attention to. You know, the whole idea of the addictiveness of applications, the addictiveness of the internet. Are you an internet addict? Have you experienced this? I know people who just, you know, they can't stand to be, you know, quiet and alone for even a minute or two anymore. I think that this is building an addictive response. We'll be back. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And Maine in Chicago. Hey, Maine, what's on your mind today?
Hey, how you doing, Tom?
Good.
Yeah. I was looking at how things are shaping up. What they say, what comes around goes around, type of thing. Like this here, to me, it's like the Civil War is like being fought again. But in the original Civil War, you know, it's like the white people fought for and with us, but now they fight with and for us. You know, it's a vice versa type thing because of the 1, 2, 3, 4% wanting to make this America into like a third world country with tall buildings and streetlights. The protests and stuff that you see now have evolved. Well, I can't get it all together, Tom.
Yeah, no, I think I get a sense of what you're saying, Maine. And well said. Thank you very much for the call. I think that it is like, you know, we're replaying the Civil War, and that was not a good war. It was not a good time. And even Robert E. Lee said there should be no memorials to this war. We don't want to pick the scab of that wound over and over again. And sure enough, you know, once he was dead, that's what we've been doing. Maine, thank you for the not that he would have stopped it, but and not that he was a good guy. I'm not trying to say that. I'm trying to say these guys are completely reinventing American history. Maine, thank you. Very well said. Kathleen in Pennellville, New York. Hey, Kathleen, what's on your mind?
Hello.
Hi, Kathleen.
Hello? Hi, Tom. It's so nice to get to speak to you. I've become a big fan of your program.
Well, thank you. What's on your mind today?
I saw something on Yahoo today that made me really nervous, and it was Roger Stone saying if there was any attempt to impeach Trump, there would be a civil war, and both sides were armed, and that if there was any senator, I believe he said senator, I could be wrong, but any senator put forth a bill to impeach Trump, that they would be killed.
Wow.
And I find this really frightening.
Well, they would be killed is the kind of language that should get him investigated by the Secret Service. But yeah, I saw that story, and I think, you know, Roger Stone, I mean, he's got Richard Nixon tattooed on his back. I'm not kidding. You know, he was Richard Nixon's number one fanboy. And, you know, that didn't work out all that well for Richard Nixon. I don't think it's going to work out all that well for Trump. Anyhow, right. Back to you, Kathleen.
I found that really scary that someone would be saying that and putting that kind of thinking out there.
Yeah, the possibility of an American civil war at this point is pretty marginal. The possibility of enormous damage being done to the United States by, you know, some kind of right-wing insurrection. Well, you know, I'm thinking back to Tim McVeigh. You know, Tim McVeigh actually believed that he was playing out the Turner Diaries scenario. In the Turner Diaries, the good guy blows up a federal building in Oklahoma, and the federal government responds. In this case, it would have been the Clinton administration responds by cracking down, by taking away people's guns, and then that causes all the good white people to rise up and kill off all the people of color and all the Jews in the country. And that's what Tim McVeigh thought was going to happen. I think maybe Roger Stone is thinking like that too, but that's not what happened. When Tim McVeigh set off that bomb, it brought America together. It didn't, you know, further divide us. So I don't know, Kathleen. I think that Roger Stone is wrong, and I would not be intimidated by what he has to say, and not be frightened by what he has to say. He's just wrong.
Well, that's a relief to hear you say that.
Yeah. Well, I think the people of the United States are waking up. The ones who seem, you know, firmly cemented in their delusional status are the ones who are only getting their information from Fox News, as far as I can tell. Kathleen, thanks for the call. We'll be back. It's Anything Goes Friday on the Tom Hartman Program. Our number 202-808-9925. We'll be picking up your calls and more of the news of the day after this break.
All the important stories we cover and the issues we care about are at HartmanReport.com. Members of our community can comment and join the conversation.
Gabriel in Oakland, California. Hey, Gabriel, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. So it always strikes me when you mention Fox News that in numerology, the only words that you can spell with the numbers 666 is Fox. Now,
what do you mean?
So if you go through the alphabet and you do the numerology, A, B, C, D, E, F is a 6. O is a 6, and X is a 6.
I get how F is a 6. I don't get how O and X are.
And then you get to the 9. You get to 9, and then you start over again in numerology.
Oh, so, I see.
And then that would make O a 6.
Right.
And X a 6. So the only word you can spell is Fox.
Whoa.
And I happen to think that may be it.
That's weird. I don't know what else to say, Gabriel. I mean, that's you know, I remember thinking back in the day how weird it was that Ronald Wilson Reagan's name, you know, was 666, because you know in Revelation it says and the you know the number is a name, you know. It's like, oh really, Fox? Huh.
It's the only word you can spell.
There you go.
So that's my Anything Goes Friday. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Gabriel. That was a good one. Rick in Wilmette, Illinois. Hey, Rick, what's up? Rick?
Yes.
Hey, sorry. You're on the air. What's on your mind?
Yes, I'm sorry. Let me take you off. I just wanted to make a comment with regard to your comment on free apps and people spending all their time on Facebook and every spare moment and the fact that they're being tracked. And I read a comment from someone in Silicon Valley, some app developer, that said, for users, if you're not paying, you're not the customer.
Exactly.
You're the product.
You're the product, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I've got I see this behavior myself. You know, I've got a little blackjack app on my phone, and I've been playing blackjack against the computer just, you know, when I get bored. And the method I've been using is every time you lose, you double your bet. And, you know, if you can not lose more than 5 or 6 times in a row, I forget which it is, you know, you always get made whole. And every time you bet the absolute minimum of $5. So I'm up to like $30,000 now in my blackjack on my phone. I mean, it's not real money, but it's like every time I win, I get that, oh, yeah, you know, there's that dopamine. And every time I get wiped out, it's like, oh, God, you know, I have to close the app and can't come back to it for an hour or so. Because, you know, when you're doubling down and you lose, it like wipes you out to the tune of $1,000 or something. And I wonder what the developers of that app are doing with all this. Oh, you know, Hartman logged in at, you know, 3 o'clock in the morning and played the game for 15 minutes.
Exactly. They're selling it to somebody.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. If you're not the customer, you are the product. Amen, Rick. Thanks a lot for the call. Magic in Winter Garden, Florida. Hey, Magic, what's on your mind today?
Hi. How you doing, Tom?
Good. What's up?
I'm a participating member of Antifa, and I actually watch what Nazis and neo-Nazis say on their websites, including like 4chan and Stormfront and the rest of them. And I kind of want to put out, you know, a general warning for people. I was watching what they were saying about the event that Dick Spencer was going to do at the University of Florida. They were planning on bringing firearms to the event, killing as many Antifa as they could find, and then using Florida's Stand Your Ground laws to get out of, to basically to get away with murder.
Right.
So I'm kind of putting out a general warning. If you're going to any protests, if you're even near Antifa, or if you are Antifa, invest in some body armor. It's a sad day where I have to say that, but it's the truth.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is a sad thing, and body, you know, it occurred to me when I was watching some of the conflicts in Charlottesville that body armor might be a good thing. It's very unfortunate. Magic, thanks for calling and sharing that with us. Mark in Hartville, Wyoming. Hey, Mark, what's on your mind?
Hey, Tom. Hey, I've been listening to you since Air America days, and
thank you.
You and I are about the same age. One of the first things I ever remember reading in the newspaper and assimilating was the arrest of Adolf Eichmann.
Oh, yeah, back in the 60s.
Yeah, I had to ask my dad to explain the article to me. What were Nazis? What were crematoriums? Why right. were the Israelis abducting him for trial?
Yep.
And I still can't understand why anyone would be proud of walking around with any kind of insignia, Nazi insignia, or Nazi salute, or any of that crap.
Yeah.
It's just beyond my comprehension.
Well, I think that it's a sign of how some of these people, and I would say probably the majority of the people who are out there chanting, you know, you will not replace us, Jews will not replace us, et cetera, how pathetic they are, how small their lives are, how neurotic and insecure they must be. Because you're right, Nazism is an offensive ideology, and one that has been responsible for the death of millions of people, tens of millions of people, and still is, you know, on an ongoing basis. And it's just really the Christian version of ISIL in some ways. You know, this you know, extreme, radical, hardcore right-wing worldview. And anybody who is proclaiming themselves a Nazi, I mean, there's I suppose some situations, you know, like if somebody's in prison and they're trying to, you know, they've got a bond to some gang for self-defense or something, maybe you could make a case. But even then, I mean, you know, this is just, it's just weird stuff. And you know, I'm with you, Mark. That is an excellent point. Thank you for calling and making it. Pat in Bellevue, Washington. Hey, Pat, what's on your mind today?
Well, I just want to know if people are aware that these drug companies are switching their drugs from prescription to over-the-counter. And once they're over-the-counter, they're going to cost you a lot more. And the other thing is that you can't count your expenses on over-the-counter drugs on if you itemize on your income tax.
Right.
And now the other thing is I'm using test strips for checking on blood sugar. And last spring, on prescription, they cost about $142 for a 7-week supply. Mm-hmm. Now they are $167 for a 7-week supply, but I get them on prescription. Mm-hmm. But in order to prove that I'm using them as prescription, then they want 6 months of records of how you're using them. They also want you to sign off that you saw the doctor very recently, specifically for your blood sugar, and that you've only got a supply of 2 days or 3 days left before you...
Is this your insurance company that's making you jump through these hoops, Pat?
What?
Is this your insurance company that's making you jump through these hoops?
I don't know. They say it's Medicare, but I can't believe that.
It sounds more like Medicare Advantage.
No, it's not.
Huh.
It's outrageous that and 7 week supply of test strips would cost $167.
Yeah.
If people have not got insurance, who's going to spend that much every 7 weeks in order to test? So all these people with latent blood diabetes aren't going to do the testing because they can't afford it.
Right. Which means more people are going to end up with gangrene or neuropathy or even death as a consequence of untreated diabetes.
Well, yeah, but the point is, why can't we count it on as an expense on the income tax?
Right. I don't know the reason. The simple thought that comes to mind is that if the IRS is trying to determine whether the itemizations that you're making on your income taxes are legitimate or not, how do you prove to them that this thing that I bought from CVS is actually a pharmaceutical, as opposed to, I guess you've got an itemized receipt. It's just if it ran through the pharmacy, everything is 100% deductible. If it goes through anything else, everything isn't. So it could be that, you know, the idea was, you know, simplify things for the IRS. Alternatively, it probably was that the idea behind that was, let's provide a tax incentive, a tax benefit, essentially, for the pharmaceutical industry. It's a tax benefit for the consumers of pharmaceuticals, but the pharmaceutical industry that's not doing OTC drugs is going to make the most money off it. Excellent point, Pat. And we've seen this particularly with anti-asthma medications and stomach acid things. They're doing
that. You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey, Tom Hartman here with the Tom Hartman Program. You know I'm serious about my health, and so I'm doing something for it. You've heard me talking about Superbeets. Well, I'm drinking Superbeets, a circulation superfood powder that helps support my heart and healthy blood pressure, too. I have amazing energy, amazing stamina as well. The New York Times calls beets fitness in a glass. With Superbeets, I get all the benefits without the bad taste or added sugar. Mix it in water or a smoothie for a jitter-free energy boost. You'll love the taste of Superbeets and feel results in as little as 20 minutes. Guaranteed your money back. Try the original berry or black cherry. I like them both. If you haven't tried it yet, now is the time. Only for the summer, you can try Superbeets for only $5.95. Here's how. Call now and get a free box of Superbeets with 10 packets to try and feel the results, plus two free indicator strips for monitoring your nitric oxide levels before and after taking Superbeets. It's just $5.95. You'll love the results. Guaranteed. More energy, more stamina, support healthy circulation. What are you waiting for? Call 800-568-9889. That's 800-568-9889. Or go to TomsBeets.com. That's TomsBeets.com. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And Sybilla in Greer, South Carolina. Hey, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Professor Tom. I don't think Trump he blundered in the presidency. I really think that billionaires and Russia and however these people are connected, they wanted him in the office so they could do damage to the United States of America. And I think it's up to us in Congress right now, with everything that he's done, to put some sort of censors through, so that there's something historically noting what we're going through.
Oh, censure.
That's it.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
Thank you. Traumatic brain injury.
It's quite all right.
Come out right. And I think it should be done that way. And as far as his issues, I know someone that I was very close to. They had a narcissistic personality disorder. They had bipolar tendency, manic depressive. They function. They're awful people, but they function, and they know what they're doing. And another thing in South Carolina, the junior lizard bought some property in North Charleston. Then senior bought it from him with money from Deutsche Bank and a gentleman. And then they sold it to Lockheed Martin.
Hmm.
So these are things we have to keep doing, and this protesting and calling and so forth and so on. I'm basing it on my experience and my mother being German and telling me all the stories from Germany. So
yeah. It's we can't fail to take these guys seriously. I mean, you know, it's when they say they want to kill us, when they say they hate the values that this country was founded on, we should take them seriously. There's a real danger in having Nazis trying to take over your government or trying to take power, and there's a real danger in Nazis having established a serious foothold, a beachhead, as it were, in one of the two major political parties. And that's absolutely what's happening, or has happened, rather. Sybilla, thank you for pointing that out. I appreciate the call. Wayne in Rocky Mount, Virginia. Hey, Wayne, what's on your mind today?
Well, I'll be honest. I did not vote for Trump. I did not vote for Clinton. I voted for Virgil Goode.
Who?
And Virgil Goode.
I have no idea who Virgil Goode is.
He was a congressman from this area. He ran for president on a minor ticket.
Huh.
But.
So what's your point, Wayne?
But we've got midterms coming up. And I don't know why they recalled Gray in California, and I can't think of the guy's name in Illinois or Indiana. Why can't we put together a recall on these midterms to recall Trump?
Because there's no provision for it in the Constitution. The states that allow recall elections have the mechanism for the recall built into their Constitution or into their state law. And there are neither at the federal level. There's only basically two responses right now to Donald Trump, arguably three. In terms of getting him out of there, there's impeachment and there's the 25th Amendment. And then the third option is simply massive political mobilization on the Democratic side so that in 2018, in the elections in November of next year, we can take back as many state houses as possible, take back the House and the Senate, and start putting some brakes on what Trump is doing and the kind of damage he can do. And this would also give us the ability to prevent him from putting another whack job like Neil Gorsuch on the right wing crazy on the Supreme Court. So those are my thoughts on that, Wayne. Thanks for the call. Mary in Port Charlotte, Florida. Hey, Mary, what's up?
No, I'm just going to go like this.
Mary, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hey.
Hi, Tom. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure. What's up?
My husband's been watching you a long time, and he watches you daily, so we just wanted to throw it out there.
Well, thank you. Hi.
Mine's not a question, but a statement.
Mm-hmm.
Trump's kids were interviewed some time ago on TV, and they said that they were not going to be involved in their father's political stuff going on. However, every time you turn around, Trump's daughter is side by side with him. His sons are involved. And I just wanted to throw it out. What's your thought on it?
Yeah. Well, that, you know, like so many promises that come from anybody with Trump as their last name, that promise was you know, a lie. And Eric's wife, Eric, one of the two sons, the one who looks like Eddie Munster, his wife has been doing TV hits as Trump TV out of the White House. You know, they've created this little TV channel that's, on the internet. And so his wife is doing that. Don Jr., of course, has, been tweeting, if nothing else, on behalf of his dad. And yeah, Ivanka has an office in, in the West Wing, right near the Oval Office. So, Trump's kids are clearly involved in this, and at least two of the three of them are still running his businesses, and which raises the question of the emoluments clause. It raises the question of how much of this is arm's length, and of course the D.C. hotel does that in a huge way. And I keep saying, I think he could be impeached just for hanging on to the D.C. hotel. Anyway, it's pretty amazing. Mary, thank you for the call. Brian in Schaumburg, Illinois. Hey, Brian, we've got a minute to the end of the hour. What's up?
Oh, I just wanted to comment. It's a beautiful summer day, and, I love history, and, it was a mere 100 years ago this summer that the American Army was landing in France and preparing to engage in World War One. Enter the slaughter that was one of mankind's biggest catastrophes, and then helped precipitate the second, or the biggest catastrophe, which was World War II. And I think a lot of people lose perspective on how quickly our world is changing compared to, you look at the great span of history of mankind. The last 100 years have just been crazy. I mean, my parents were born in a home without electricity. Yeah. I'm an electrician by trade now. I've worked on data centers where where we handle information at the speed of light. In World War One, we had wooden fabric airplanes with 100 horsepower engines. Now we have space-based lasers and supersonic jet aircraft. I mean, and another thing is the population of the United States has gone from 100 million to over 300 million people in a mere 100 years.
Yeah.
And
no, it's true. Brian, we're out of time, but you're right. Things are happening fast. We'll be back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Welcome back. Henry McMaster, the guy who replaced Nikki Haley as the governor of South Carolina, has issued an executive order this morning, directing all state agencies. This is from Jesse Hellman, a piece over at The Hill. Directing all state agencies, the State Department of Health and Human Services direct state agencies to cease providing funds in any form, whether it's by grant, contract, state-administered federal funds, or any other form, to any abortion clinic. One of the first things that authoritarian governments typically do when they come to power, or authoritarian religions do when they acquire this kind of power, is exclude the women. It's first step, step one. Diminish their power, diminish their ability to play a meaningful role in society, cut off support to them, make it, this is the step one always for an authoritarian government. Is take women out of civil society, out of the loop, diminish their rights and powers. And this, of course, is the exact same game that Governor McMaster, Henry McMaster in South Carolina, is playing today. And he's doing it for political purposes. As Jenny Black, the president and CEO of Planned Parenthood South Atlantic, said, today's executive order by Governor McMaster hurts South Carolinians in the name of politics. She went on to say, while he throws women under the bus to score political points, Planned Parenthood South Atlantic will continue to focus on providing the wide range of accessible, affordable health care services that our patients and his constituents rely on. We will not stop fighting to protect our patients' access to health care. And the Texas now tried to do the same thing, but the federal judge blocked that. And Texas is appealing that. We'll see what happens in South Carolina. Fascinating piece by Kimberly Crispin Campbell in Politico this morning. It's about Louise Linton. She is the new wife of Steve Mnuchin, who is the Goldman Sachs guy who's now our Treasury Secretary, the half billionaire who is now our Treasury Secretary. They flew to Kentucky, to Fort Knox, actually. They watched the eclipse from the roof of Fort Knox, if the media reports that I've seen are accurate. And on the way back, Louise Linton got off the plane and Instagrammed a picture of herself with, you know, hey, here's my, you know, with hashtags for at least four of the designer, you know, clothing that she was wearing. She was apparently wearing, you know, $15,000 worth of clothes or something like that, some amazing amount of money. And then, you know, when this mother of three from Portland said, you know, how deplorable that we're paying for your trip, then Louise Linton went off on this screed against this woman in Oregon. But what's interesting is that the story here where Kimberly Crispin Campbell is talking about, you know, the Instagram post heard around the world, and she got off, you know, with Hermes scarf and Valentino rock stud heels and all this kind of stuff. And she said it later, one Instagrammer altered the photo of Linton depicting a Marie Antoinette in sunnies. But I have some objections to this, writes this author. I literally wrote a book on Marie Antoinette and her role as a fashion icon. And while I don't have undue sympathy for her, I can't help feeling that she's the one being maligned by these comparisons and cake references. That's right. Likening Louise Linton or Ivanka or Melania to Marie Antoinette is not fair to Marie Antoinette.
Oh, my.
She writes, this isn't the first time the Queen's ghost has returned to haunt the Trump administration. First Lady Melania Trump has made several claims to the title of modern-day Marie Antoinette. For example, by appearing on the cover of a magazine pretending to eat a bowl of jewels or wearing a $51,000 coat to the G7 summit. Ivanka Trump has also invited comparisons to the Queen. There was the $10,000 Trump-branded bracelet she wore on 60 Minutes and then promoted in a press release. Chinese sweatshops that produce her clothing line, and the infamous Memorial Day champagne popsicle recipe. Yeah. But, you know, anyhow, so she, in the Kimberly Crispin Campbell in this article is sort of defending Marie Antoinette. And the whole point, you know, every story, she says, every story needs a villain, every horror story. While it's vastly seductive to, or reductive, excuse me, to blame the entire French Revolution on one person, it's human nature to seek out a scapegoat, preferably a female foreign one who was not very popular in the first place. And which brings us to Louise Linton. Some fashion writers have argued that Linton's crime was a rude response to a critic, not advertising her taste for luxury goods. Could be. You know, which was worse? The problem here, writes Kimberly Crispin Campbell, is Linton's shamelessness. The generally well-intentioned Marie Antoinette at least fudged her wardrobe account so it didn't look like she was spending so much money during an economic crisis. Linton didn't just dress an all-designer outfit for the social media camera. She covered the post with hashtags, recalling actresses and other influencers who are paid to promote designer labels. And, you know, says these things are just cliches. So, bottom line, Marie Antoinette, not as bad as Louise Linton. That's really scraping it. Meanwhile, most Americans, this from CNBC, most Americans live paycheck to paycheck. Now, while Louise Linton, Steve Mnuchin's worth, you know, at least $500 million from what I've seen in the papers. And Louise Linton, you know, grew up in a castle in Scotland and, you know, no slouch. Although I think that in the case of Mnuchin, she has married money. But whatever it may be, you know, getting off a plane wearing clothing whose value equals the annual income of many working people in the United States, pretty shocking. But look at the, you know, 78% of full-time workers in the United States say they live paycheck to paycheck, up from 75% last year. This is from Career Builder. 56% of people say that their debt is unmanageable. They're in over their heads. And 56% also saved $100 or less each month. So this is, I mean, you know, we're over $1 trillion in credit card debt now in the United States. We're over $1 trillion in student loan debt now in the United States. We've got car debts exploding. Housing just dropped. Housing, previously owned homes dropped 1.6% last month, sales of previously owned homes. That is typically an early warning sign. And then finally, I want to refer you to a piece that Bobby Azarian wrote for Raw Story, titled Five Key Psychological Traits All Trump Supporters Appear to Share. A research out of UC Santa Cruz sheds new light on the president's dizzying rise to power. And what they're looking at is basically authoritarian personalities. He writes, Trump's speeches, which are laced with absolutist terms like loser and complete disaster, are naturally appealing to those with this syndrome, this authoritarian personality syndrome. So that's the first thing that you find commonly among Trump supporters. They themselves are authoritarians, although they're authoritarian followers. Trump is an authoritarian leader. Second, social dominance orientation. This is referred to as SDO. And it's different from authoritarian personality syndrome. It refers to people who have a preference for the social societal hierarchy of groups, specifically with the structure in which the high status groups have dominance over the low status one. So those with SDO are typically dominant, tough-minded, and driven by self-interest. And Trump is, in his speeches, constantly appeals to people with SDO by repeatedly making a clear distinction between groups with a high status, white, and those groups that are typically thought of as belonging to a lower status, immigrants and minorities. In a 2016 survey of 406 American adults published this year in the Journal of Personality and Individual Differences found that those who scored high on both SDO and authoritarianism were those who intended to vote for Trump in the election. Number three, prejudice. Support for Trump is correlated with a standard scale of modern racism. Number four, intergroup contact. Trump's white supporters have experienced significantly less contact with minorities than other Americans. A 2016 study found that, quote, the racial and ethnic isolation of whites at the zip code level is one of the strongest predictors of Trump support. And number five, relative deprivation, refers to the experience of being deprived of something to which one believes they're entitled. It is the discontent felt when one compares their position in life to others who they feel are less or who are equal or inferior, but have unfairly had more success than them. And, Trump supporters are not broke. An analysis conducted by 538 estimated that the annual median income of Trump supporters was $72,000 a year. So, you know, the Trump supporters are not doing poorly. They're not necessarily the backwoods, you know, poverty-stricken, toothless, horrible stereotype that is so extant. In fact, they're more likely to be upper middle class white people. So, interesting stuff. A whole bunch of interesting stuff here. We'll pick up your phone calls on Anything Goes Friday. Right in. What I like about Harry's is their amazingly high quality shave. It's smooth and close, just how a shave should be. And Harry's passes savings on to you by selling directly over the internet. No more frustrating drugstore trips. Harry's knows that some of you guys might be skeptical about trying a new brand of razor. So instead of just telling you, Harry's wants to prove that you'll love their stuff with a free trial. They made this special free trial with everything you need to evaluate Harry's. It's customizable. You try it for free. It's a $13 value. Someone with the Harry's team even checks in to see how your trial is going. It's 100% risk-free, guaranteed. You can even call and cancel or get a refund whenever you want. So why not give Harry's a shot and judge for yourself? Head on over to harrys.com/Tom. That's T-H-O-M, Harry's with an S, harrys.com/Tom to get it now. Get started with your Harry's free trial offer today. All you cover is just a few bucks in shipping. To get your free trial set, including a handle, blade, shave gel, and travel blade cover, go to harrys.com/Tom. That's harrys.com/Tom. Don't wait. Get started with Harry's today. Welcome back. And our music for the day. This is from Roy Zimmerman. A beautiful little song. Just thought you'd like it.
Little darling, the streets are full of neo-Nazis.
Oh, neo-Nazis. Oh.
See them snarling. I'm pretty sure they're off their meds.
Yeah.
They're parading with the stars and bars and tiki torches.
Oh, the tiki torches were just done.
Demonstrating they got a point. It's on their heads. There goes the sun. They're blocking out the sun. And I say it's alt-right.
It's alt-right.
Yes. I've been thinking that the Republican Revolution is just Lincoln rolling over in his grave.
Yes, Lincoln is rolling over.
There goes the sun. Civil War rerun. I say it's alt-right.
I love it. Roy Zimmerman.
Scum, 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 here they come. Scum, 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 here they come.
Yes. See how he's going to wrap this thing up.
Keep resisting. We won't let ignorance defeat us.
No.
Keep persisting. The Klan can't stand the light of day. Then here comes the sun. We'll say, here comes the sun. And we'll say, it's all right.
There you go. We'll get there. We will get there. Okay, Bill, in Oriskany, New York. Am I saying that right, Bill?
Yeah, close enough, Tom. Let me take you off speaker.
Sure, sure. So what's on your mind today, Bill?
Some say Oriskany was the turning point in the Revolutionary War, but that's not what I called it.
Oh, wow. Oriskany.
I was thinking, yeah, Oriskany. It's Oriskany, New York. It's basically the geographic center of New York State.
Huh. Okay.
Between Utica and Rome, near Syracuse.
Oh, yeah, I know where that would be. Yeah.
I was looking into who owns the companies that make the voting machines. And it's kind of a convoluted list because Diebold was bought by Premier, which was bought by Dominion, a company in Toronto. But it's not really that. If we were to start, not unlike Fox News with their, some have said, if we started a, some have said George Soros is planning on buying all the election machines, all the voting machine companies, it may get the right thinking, we probably ought to do away with those now.
Yeah.
And go back to
well, and you know, if George Soros wants to have some influence on the elections, that might be the best way to do it. It would be to actually buy the voting machine companies, flip out the, yeah. the right wingers and cause them to go back to paper ballots. And then, you know, we won't see that redshift happening. We won't, yeah, we won't see the machines getting hacked.
Right, right.
So, you know.
I'm saying it kind of half tongue in cheek and kind of at the same time. You know, it would scare them because he's the boogeyman. He's
well, the soil is fertile. I mean, the ground has been laid by Donald Trump saying that there were 3 million illegal votes for him or for Hillary, excuse me, against him in the last election. Well, there weren't 3 million people who voted. That's fairly obvious, and easy to debunk. But what if there were 3 million actual votes that? You know, we're not cast by people, but we're counted or something, you know, or not counted, as the case may be. I mean, you know, he already has his followers suspicious of the system and of the system of electronic voting. And, you know, I think that I agree with you, Bill. I think we should exploit that as much as possible to get rid of these perfidious voting machines, which by and large are not even owned by American companies. Bill. Great call. Thanks a lot. And happy Anything Goes Friday to you. We'll be back with more of your calls. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And it's Anything Goes Friday. Well, let's pick up your phone calls. Holly in Sterling Spring, excuse me, in Silver Spring, Maryland. Hey, Holly, what's on your mind today?
Well, I just want to kind of appeal to your maybe your critical thinking skills here for a moment.
Okay, let's try that.
Okay, let's try it. It was about the Antifa movement. It seems like they're a violent anti-government anarchist movement, and I don't know how that's going to help.
Actually, they're not,
Holly.
They are.
Well, they are. They wear masks. They smash windows. They go with weapons. They are, and they're very negative.
I think you're describing the Black Bloc folks, not the anti-fascist
overlap.
Folks.
Yes, Well,
there may be some people who are both, certainly.
Well, you see them at every rally.
Right.
They have the anarchist flag, and they have batons. They have black masks on, and you see them on inauguration day. They were smashing windows and downtown D.C.
That was not the anti-fascist movement. Those were the Black Bloc people who proudly call themselves Black Bloc and proudly call themselves anarchists. They are not anti-fascist.
So the Antifa movement has...
The anti-fascist movement began in Germany in opposition to Hitler.
Right. So what tactics do they use?
Principally mass demonstrations.
What do they do when they demonstrate? Are they being peaceful demonstrators along?
Yes,
with
I mean that's that. That has always been the history
okay.
of the anti-fascist movement. It's peaceful demonstration. Now, you know, if you're attacked, are you suggesting that demonstrators who are attacked should not defend themselves?
Yourself, but don't seek it out. Don't incite it. And if you go to their Facebook, they're calling for a national riot on November 4th. And they're calling it a riot.
There's no they, Holly. There's not one central organization that is the anti-fascist movement. Anybody can claim that they are these folks. And there's no doubt in my mind that there's some probably, people on the hard right who are trying to provoke things, on this. Holly, we're going around in circles. Thank you for the call. Red in Seattle. Hey, Red, what's on your mind today?
I wanted to talk about Antifa and follow up on that last caller.
Sure.
Yeah, first of all, there's a lot of misconceptions about Antifa right now. And
I've noticed.
Distinguishing them from so-called Black Bloc, I think, is a mistake because Black Bloc is only a tactic used by...
Red, what happened?
You still there?
Yeah.
And
so you said Black Bloc is only a tactic used by...
By anti-fascists, other activists, anarchists, communists.
Right.
But I think it's important to make that distinction and not lump them all together.
Okay. Well, that's what I was trying to do, is trying to say the anti-fascists are people who are protesting fascism. The Black Bloc people are people who think that, if you can screw up the structure of society enough, it'll fall apart and you can rebuild it in a way that you like. And I disagree with the latter, and I agree with the former. Red, thanks for the call. Andy in Billings, Montana. Hey, Andy, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Oh, wow. I can't believe I got through. So I found you through Mike Malloy, and I was thinking about this, and I thought, oh, my God, I would love to have or hear both of you take calls, do a show together or something. That'd be kind of interesting.
We've done that a few times, always in person, though. We have mostly in Seattle and San Francisco, Mike and I, and a few other people. Ron Reagan joined us, and Randy Rhodes used to join us. We do these things for our radio stations. But anyhow, Mike is a great guy. So what's on your mind, Andy? That's not what you called about.
No. This might be kind of a dumb question, but I was thinking about if Trump either resigns, which I don't see happening, or he gets impeached, and I'm thinking 2018 is when it's going to happen. But if that does happen, then that would automatically give Pence the presidency. But if they go back and they see that, the whole Russian scandal is legit, which I believe it is, I'm just wanting to know, what your opinion is on this. There's no, redo of the election.
No.
Pence would finish out Trump's term, and then they would have to do a 2020 election, correct?
That's correct. Yeah, there's no provision for a, for anything other than impeachment in our Constitution.
Okay. Well, I don't know. I was pretty bummed that
the way that we can respond to Donald Trump is by organizing, and we need to be doing this literally today. I mean, every single day that goes by that we're not engaging, and we are, and there's a lot of groups out there, Progressive Democrats for America, Democracy for America, Our Revolution, MoveOn.org. There's a bunch of organizations out there that are working really hard to make this happen. We need to be claiming electoral victories in the elections coming up next November, in November of 2018. And this is kind of last chance, and that sets us up for 2020. And we particularly need to be doing this at the state level so that we can ungerrymander or de-gerrymander or whatever the word is, some of these states where Republicans have got it so they get even less than 50% of the vote, but they have more than 50% of the representation in Congress. We've got to do that. Andy, thanks for the call. Coming up tomorrow, we'll have the latest news and information from Wall Street and Main Street, all points in between, plus the best of the rest of the news. And don't forget, democracy begins with you. Get out there, show up, participate, tag, you're it. We'll see you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, visit TomHartman.com.